NAPT programming support comes from the 13th Annual Imaginative Film and Media Arts Festival, October 17th through the 21st, in downtown Toronto, Canada. As the premier Indigenous media arts festival in the world, Imaginative celebrates the newest and best in film, video, radio, and new media. On the web at imaginative.org. And by News from Indian Country, the only Indian-owned and operated, reservation-based, national independent newspaper in the country. On the web at IndianCountryNews.net.
Welcome to Producer Profiles, a production of Native American Public Telecommunications with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Here's NAPT production assistant Danny Fast.
Director Sophie Romanier and co-producer Jay Minton talk about their NAPT-supported documentary, Yellow Fever. The film follows Tina Garnanez, a young Navajo woman, as she begins a personal investigation into the history of the Navajo uranium boom, examining its lasting impacts and the potential for new mining on the Navajo reservation. Looking at the cost of cheap energy and the future of the industry, Tina becomes an advocate for environmental justice. Romanier, owner of Iron Thorn Productions, a nonprofit 501c3, has worked as a filmmaker and freelance journalist worldwide. She has produced, edited, and directed over 20 documentaries, short films, and music videos. Minton has worked on a myriad of film projects, including the miniseries Sacred Space. Here is the interview from September 2012.
Yellow Fever is about a young Navajo veteran, Tina Garnanez, as she looks at the legacy of uranium mining in and around her area in the Navajo Nation. And she sort of goes from being a curious family member looking at her family's tragic past with uranium, and then sort of becomes more active in the fight for environmental justice for her people.
What was the inspiration to make this film?
Initially, I was spending some time working on the coal-fired power plant issue and the Desert Rock power plant protests and public hearings, and I was doing some short pieces on environmental issues around energy production in Navajo and Four Corners area. And the uranium issue just became, it was such a striking contrast to the way of life and the kind of people that were so deeply affected by uranium mining, that the story I felt was so dynamic that it started veering off from coal-fired power plants into the uranium legacy. And what really spurred this particular project was meeting Tina Garnanez, learning her story, visiting her family, getting to know her family members.
And Jay, how did you get involved?
You know, I came into this project just going to give Sophie some music as a new boyfriend, actually. My friend and I, who happens to be a Navajo cello player, we recorded a few songs, and I thought, hey, you know, this girl's doing this film. I'm going to give her some songs she can use. As I got more involved in the project, I just got more and more interested. It just kept turning into more and more as we started researching. Sound was how it all started, and then I became the co-producer.
I was curious, when you began working on this film?
2007, started going to public hearings about the Desert Rock Power Plant, spending time with Eloise from the Dodat Desert Rock, the fight against the Desert Rock Power Plant. Just started meeting the right people and doing research. And then we did primarily most of the shooting was pretty solid in 2009. We definitely shot in 2008 and 2010, 2011, but most of the bulk of the shooting was in 2009. And we spent a lot of time in a Volkswagen van out in the Four Corners area, just hanging around Shiprock with our solar panel and our camera, and spending time with fabulous folks and Tina's family and all the wonderful people that we've met along the way. But a lot of really just beautiful mornings, waking up on top of the Carrizo Mountains in our van. It was our little production, mobile production studio. It was a great time. Yeah, we're just finishing up post-production now, so it's been a long haul.
What is it like being in these places where people are living, but yet there's this deadly radioactivity?
It's bizarre to be in those places with these people. I mean, imagine living there every day. And we think, oh, geez, how long are we going to be here? Or how much exposure could we get? And you think, these folks have been living here their whole life. And radiation is a very strange thing, because one person, we've met people in Colorado that said, oh, I have a bucket of yellow cake in my garage, never hurt me. And then somebody else says 11 family members die from exposure. So oddly, you don't know, even two people exposed to the same amount of uranium, really, radiation might respond in totally different ways. And we struggled with feeling uncomfortable sometimes in areas that were highly, highly affected.
We found out that they just said that, you know, don't play in those areas. It's dangerous. Those are mines. You just stay away from them. And that was the only talk we got. And then as we all got older, we learned they were uranium mines. And then we learned all about how our great uncles, my grandpa was a uranium miner, and how they're all dead now from various cancers. And that's when we really knew how bad it was to be around those contaminated sites.
The more knowledge that we gained about radiation and about uranium, the less we were worried about our own experience, and the more we really understood how it could be for those folks to continue to stay there. Because in a way, you're like, you're living at ground zero. Why are you still here? I understand you have a very strong connection to this land, but your family's health is in danger. It got confusing to try to really understand where they were coming from. But in the end, you can get it because the people are really connected to the land. And maybe sometimes they feel as if there's something transcendent that might protect them. So it was strange. Jay, what about you?
You just go with it. You know that you're getting less exposure than going on a long international airplane flight, probably even going to the dentist. Well, at least you hope you are. But yeah, it's a little bit creepy. We got invited to go to WIP at one point, and at that point in the research and the filmmaking, I'd really had about enough exposure for my time at this point. I don't know if I
for your years worth.
Yeah. I think I've had enough, so maybe we can do that next year or something.
WIP is a waste isolation project plant, pilot plant in southern New Mexico, where you can go a mile down deep into the earth where they're storing nuclear waste from Los Alamos National Laboratories in a giant salt bed. We were encouraged to join, but we didn't.
How do you think yellow fever will contribute to that controversy and that discussion about nuclear energy?
When you're looking at fossil fuels and what fossil fuels are doing to our atmosphere, it's very easy to turn around and say, well, when you're looking at all the energy sources available to us, each one of them has polluting aspects. Solar power, you got batteries and solder and you lots of water usage, and wind is, there's not enough steel in the, you know, in the world to really generate enough energy with wind power and all these different issues. But it's easy sometimes to say, oh, nuclear power, that's going to be easy because you just use this small bit of fuel and it lasts so long. But really, I think what this film can offer is it looks at long-term effects of people that live side by side next to the mines. So I think it'll inform people about uranium development and the in-situ leach mining. I think is especially relevant because in our country today, that's how they're doing a lot of mining for uranium and exploration for uranium with in-situ leach mining. And so for people to understand what that actually is and how in Kingsville, Texas, there's still, although the mine plans say that it'll be cleaned up, it doesn't get cleaned up. So although it's different from the old ways and cleaner than that, it's still maybe poisoning our water supplies. It becomes a confusing discussion because you say, well, there's radiation everywhere. There's radiation in the walls. There's radiation when you go in the airplane. And when you talk about cleaning up to zero radiation, as Jim Konka talks about in his interview, there's already radiation in the ground. So how can you clean up to zero?
Jim Konka is a nuclear scientist and cleanup specialist. He works at the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant in Carlsbad, New Mexico.
We decided as a society in the world in 1959 that all radiation was bad. We just made that decision. It was easy. It was seemed conservative at the time. That all radiation is bad. It's called a linear no-threshold dose hypothesis. So all radiation is bad, and so from now on, when you do anything, you've got to clean up to zero. Okay, well, that presents a problem. So, and you can imagine, now in 1959, we didn't have much nuclear, right? It was 1959. Now that you have nuclear medicine, you have nuclear analysis, you have, you have nuclear well logging, I mean, you've got nuclear everywhere, okay? And nuclear energy, too. And so now the idea that all radiation is bad doesn't really make sense because it isn't bad. I mean, we use it. We're sitting in about 0.3 rem. Right now, it's cosmic rays. There's uranium in these walls. I mean, it's outside the soil. It's natural. It's not bomb stuff. It's just natural stuff. It's this part of the earth. So there's radiation everywhere. So you can't get too freaked out about a little bit of radiation.
generally, I think, unfortunately, the film will just show you how complicated this issue truly is and what a dynamic discussion it is. And so what the film is supposed to do is encourage discussion, encourage people to be aware and to take it upon themselves to understand a little bit more about this global issue that we should all be participating in.
It is a hot topic. As little people know about it, there's a lot of talk in the headlines, a lot of talk here and there about green nuclear power. And some of those statistics are fabulous. They're great. There's more radiation thrown into the atmosphere every day by the coal power plants. It's in the coal. And as we burn it, this radiation is being let off into the atmosphere. So
it's the conversation, I think, that we want to provoke.
Kind of changing gears now, I want to talk a little bit about Iron Thorn Productions. Sophie, can you tell me about what the mission is of your production company?
Well, Iron Thorn Productions has now sort of morphed into our new nonprofit television, which really is a media for education and empowerment. We really like to tackle subject matter that is current and really relevant today in terms of human rights or environment. And it really is a fire under the kettle of these two companies that really keeps us going, the fact that even one film seen by one person can really influence and affect how they make decisions in the future. It really feels like being a part of the conversation, working on social issue documentaries. We seek out those stories that have these aspects where you have a person that is affected, a personal story. You have an environmental or human rights issue, and you have a journey of discovery. And also now with our new nonprofit, we're working with other grassroots organizations like the Navajo Nation Defendants of Uranium Workers Committee. They were the group of elders that we traveled to Washington with. They, for instance, are a perfect group that are nonprofit. We made posters for them. We made a website for them. We made business cards for them. We made a film to help them in their lobbying efforts. We do this because they are folks that have an important cause that are not technologically savvy. We felt that we could really use media as a tool for change in even a deeper way by taking our tools and handing them over to some people that are working on issues in a more grassroots way. So not only educational films, but tools for change for these other groups. So as a service, as a free service to these grassroots groups.
Issue TV was inspired in all these different ways where voices that really could use a stronger voice, something that people could really sink their teeth into, the people that are in these underserved areas, they don't even have computers. So they can't get on Facebook and shout their cause. They can't make a movie. They can't do a lot of these things. So we thought it would be a great idea to help these voices.
And it appears as though at least Sophie, you've done films around the world. How do you get out into the world and do your film work internationally?
For many years, I did all the jobs. I'm so thankful now not to do all the jobs at once, shooting, camera, research, editing, and producing. So it gave me a lot of freedom. I spent 5 years living in Southeast Asia and Thailand and spent a lot of time in that community. Just spending time in the developing world is really a great eye-opener for me in terms of looking at the world and myself through their eyes. So it was international travel that made me want to be a documentary filmmaker because there were things that I was seeing and ways that my perspective was being affected that many of my friends, they weren't going to be able to travel to these places. So I wanted to bring this inspiration back to them with filmmaking. Some of the films that I made in these different countries have gone to film festivals, won awards, or have had successes, and some of them have not. So it has been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to create works that speak to interesting cultural aspects.
Do you guys have anything else that you'd like to add before we finish up?
Well, we really hope that viewers can experience this topic in a similar way that we get to experience it as filmmakers. The push-me-pull-you of ideas, priorities, and the understanding that energy is not free. Energy is a very, very expensive resource that we have cultivated. And it's brought our society to great heights. But I'm pretty sure that most people that use energy have no idea what the cost truly is. And I think as people, we need continue living as we do without destroying ourselves. And I think ultimately, I hope that when people watch our film, that's what they will come away with, is an understanding that energy is a very complicated and a dynamic issue. And we all need to be a part of it in one way or another, because we are all consumers of it. So we should take it upon ourselves a little bit of responsibility in at least understanding what it takes to live in this technology-filled world that we do.
That was Sophie Romanier and Jay Minton talking about their NAPT-supported documentary, Yellow Fever. To preview the film's trailer or for more information about Yellow Fever, visit yellowfeverfilm.com.
Support comes from Native American Public Telecommunications through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Interviews were conducted by Ben Kramer and edited by Tobias Grant, with support from Danny Fast. Theme music written and performed by Jim Boyd. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of NAPT's Producers Profile.
NAPT programming support comes from the 13th Annual Imaginative Film and Media Arts Festival, October 17th through the 21st in downtown Toronto, Canada. As the premier Indigenous media arts festival in the world, Imaginative celebrates the newest and best in film, video, radio, and new media. On the web at imaginative.org. And by News from Indian Country, the only Indian-owned and operated, reservation-based, national independent newspaper in the country. On the web at indiancountrynews.net.